Good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright. I'm the Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's Council meeting on the 4th of November 2024 and welcome to those in the public gallery. It is 5:30pm and I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that Council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are live streamed on YouTube and in accordance with Council's policy, I will ask Mr. Smee to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land, the Muwinina people, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have Director of People and Finance, Mr. David Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Daniel Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. David Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms. Delise Shikuti, Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tasha Tyler Moore, Senior Planning Support Officer, Ms. Emma Carson, Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Sam Adams, and the Executive Assistant, Mrs. Amanda Morton. Apologies this evening, we have Mayor Councillor Paula Reet, Councillor Midgley, and our Chief Executive Officer, Dave Stewart. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, for confirmation of the minutes. Move Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Bain, that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 19 held on the 21st of October 2024 be confirmed as a true record. All those in favour and against, the motion is carried. Workshops held since the last council meeting. On the 28th of October, we had a workshop on the operational update. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have any interest they would like to declare? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. This relates to the DA 2024-91. I have spoken to one of the representors. One of the people who made a submission, I've had correspondence with them and I will remain in the room.
Thank you, Councillor Fox.
Yes, I too have had conversations with members of the Taruna community about this issue and I will stay in the room. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any others? No? Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Thank you. And I know you know this, but if you could please state your name and your suburb for the record. Thank you.
Mark Dunellen from Huntingfield.
Good afternoon, Deputy Mayor. I think there's no doubt in anyone's mind that there are plenty of people sad to see the departure of the coffee hole at the Kingborough Hub. And with the coffee hole leaving and me attending the hub for parkrun every Saturday morning, and having talked to the owners of the coffee hole before, I see a great opportunity for a portable coffee vendor to attend the Kingborough Hub every Saturday morning, perhaps even the weekend for Kingston Park attendees. There's 200 to 300 people regularly attending every Saturday morning to parkrun. What expedited process might there be available to a coffee vendor to take advantage of the fleeting opportunity to get access to the site every Saturday morning?
I think that's a good question. Is that for you, Mr. Smee? Ms. Shikuti, thank you.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Thank you for the question. Staff actually held a meeting today to discuss exactly the question you have asked to us tonight. We are looking at that option of being able to have local food or coffee vans, particularly for those higher attendance time, so park run potentially maybe after school on a Friday. So we are looking at, and we do have to go through the process to do this, but whether we can establish an approved site near the near Kingston Park for interested vendors to utilise.
Thank you very much. That's all today.
Thank you. Moving on now, are there any other questions from the gallery? No. Moving on to questions on notice from the public. Just a reminder that if you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Bit of a mouthful. We had several questions on notice. The first one was governance structure regarding the new Kingborough planning scheme from Ms. Jackie Perkins, and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. The second was regarding landscape conservation zone from Ms. Kim Phillips, and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. The third, landscape conservation zone from Ms. Angela Hanley, and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. The next was regarding Kingborough planning scheme from Ms. Jo Landon, and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. The next one was regarding landscape values from Ms. Jill Winter, and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. And the last was regarding LCZ proposed zoning impact from Ms. Sandra Brady, and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. Moving now to page 7, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My first question is about deer management, feral deer management. The National Deer Management Coordinators and Tasmanian organisations will meet to discuss the National Deer Action Plan in Campbelltown on Wednesday, the 14th of November, to enhance collaboration between organisations, share ideas and increase understanding and effective best practice management to reduce or prevent wild deer impacts. Kingborough Council should be very proud of our leadership in this place, being the first council, I believe, in Tasmania to endorse feral deer eradication in our municipality. My question is, will anyone from Council be attending the Deer Forum in Campbelltown to discuss and share our enthusiasm for wild deer management?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I'm actually unsure. I'm sure the Natural Areas and Biodiversity team are aware that this is happening, but I'll take that on notice and we'll provide a response.
Any other questions?
Thank you. One more, if I may.
One more, sure.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor. A second question. This one is about roads, specifically around Pelverata Road, the reconstruction and or the repair work on Pelverata Road and funding arrangements. It's been brought to my attention that in previous years, as Targa Tasmania has had involvement, so to speak, with Pelverata Road, the question really is, has the state government contributed funding towards Pelverata Road? Specifically around, that's the first aspect of my question. Has the state government contributed to this municipality for road repair?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the simple answer is no. So I guess from our perspective there, we've obviously put a lot of time and money into doing various things on Pelverata Road, as you're aware. Each year we've been putting an allocation aside for that. The Targa is a one-off event in terms of overall damage to the road. It's not really a factor, so to speak. So realistically, it would be probably an unrealistic idea to actually then go back to the state government and ask them to actually contribute towards them having used the road in the past.
Any further questions? No, still on page 7. Questions? Oh, sorry. Councillor Richardson.
Apologies. I just wanted to ask a question regarding a tree that is on Rosalind Avenue, or was on Rosalind Avenue near the Woodlands Roundabout. About 3 weeks ago, I sent an email to the CEO following a number of residents flagging the tree as dangerously hanging over the road with a concern that the tree would blow over in the next big wind. That was actioned quickly, and a team was sent out to have a look at it, from what I understand, and then an arborist report was requested. At the time that staff assessed the tree, they said it wasn't an immediate danger. Then we had some big winds on Saturday, and Sunday that tree was across the road. So a couple of questions. Number one, have we received an arborist report, and what did it say? And number two, how was it determined at the time that the tree was no danger to the public?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your acting mayor, yes, we've received an arborist report for that particular tree. The arborist report made quite a few comments, but basically said that the tree was in a situation of being tolerable risk, if you like. So in other words, it was a risk that could continue with some various different actions in place here, which included some pruning and other bits and pieces that went with that as well. I guess what they're doing is they're using their experience, that's why we use arborists there, to actually make an assessment based on what they would believe the risk would be on a number of different factors there. It could be on the shape of the tree, the soil conditions, whether the roots have been impacted, the overhang, or lots of different things like that, if you like. That's not a surefire way of actually making sure that something doesn't actually happen. It's just unfortunate in this situation there that something happened fairly shortly after getting that arborist report. From our perspective, what I would be doing is saying, just because of that reason there, is going back to the arborist there and just, I guess, asking the question as to say, okay, this is sort of what you've come up with and this is what's actually happened afterwards. Do you have any other comments to actually make in terms of that? So that would be a usual sort of response for us to actually take.
Okay, thank you. At the time, staff went out and made a determination that it wasn't an immediate risk. So it turns out that was backed up by the arborist report. The people that are going out and making those assessments, do they have the requisite qualifications to make that assessment?
Through your acting mayor. They're not arborists, but they do have the experience and qualification to actually make a prelim assessment, enough to actually say, do we actually need to get someone independent, an independent arborist, to actually go out there and make an assessment of that tree. So they're more than capable of actually doing that. I guess this is what they do day in, day out, if you like. They're used to seeing lots of different trees in lots of different locations, in lots of different conditions as well at the same time. And I guess you could argue, as you mentioned there, that they sort of came up with the same prelim conclusion that the arborist came up as their final conclusion.
Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. Is the decision to err on the side of the tree being safe impacted by the fact that that the tree is on the significant tree register?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. It's certainly a factor that we have significant trees within the municipality that we obviously want to protect and maintain as much as we possibly can, and there's a process obviously for trees actually going on that register and also for them having to be removed from that register as well at the same time. Having said that, an assessment that we would make for any tree in a location where it may have some sort of safety issues would be the same regardless. So if it was a tree that wasn't significant but it was deemed to be an area there where it could potentially be a safety issue, it would be exactly the same assessment, which is exactly what they actually did on site. They assessed that tree there and said, on the balance of what we actually know and what we can see and what we can assess, we don't think it's actually a safety issue. However, it's enough for us to actually prompt us to actually go get an arborist report to actually confirm that, which is what actually happened and what actually got confirmed. However, once again, that's just based on an assessment of what you can actually see. and you know, it's unfortunate sometimes when something happens shortly after that, and I guess people put two and two together and say, well, I told you so, but you know, that's how risk actually works.
Further question?
Yeah. So given now that in the last two sets of decent wind that we've had, and in two separate events, about 60% of that tree has blown over, would it be your expectation that that tree would be removed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So we've sent something back up to a couple of other officers in our NAB area in council there to get some opinions from them as well at the same time. In my opinion, based on what we've got from what's actually happened and in terms of, you know, all the other information that's come from the ARBIS report and their prelim assessment, that it would be something that we'd be putting forward as a recommendation to consider, because effectively that's one of the main things we also need to consider, as I said, regardless of the tree type, whether there's any safety issues associated with it. So we're just waiting on those comments back from an NAB, and we'll probably get some further comments back from an arborist as well at the same time, just to confirm that, and then if that's the case, then that's what will actually happen.
Further questions from anybody? Moving now to questions on notice from councillors. There was one question on notice regarding the Kingborough Planning Scheme consultation from Councillor Antoli and an officer's response from Adrian Stander. We now move to the open session adjourns. The planning authority commences at 5:47. We're on page 8, officers' reports to the planning authority. So we're considering DA-24-91, development application for demolition, vegetation removal and construction of mixed-use development and associated infrastructure and roadworks at 150 and 152 Channel Highway, Taruna and adjacent road. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Antoli, seconded Councillor Street. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So this development application is for 150 and 152 Channel Highway in Taruna, beautiful Taruna. It involves a proposal by the developer to demolish existing dwellings and construct a mixed-use development. The project includes 8 residential units, retail and food services, and accompanying infrastructure that include roadworks and parking. The proposal aligns with our planning scheme, the interim planning scheme, although some building standards such as height require discretionary approval. Some key points from the report: it's a 3-storey structure and it'll house commercial spaces on the ground floor and residences on the upper, with 2 levels of semi-basement parking. I believe it's 65 spaces in total, and an accessible It's accessible via driveway from Channel Highway. The design also includes 0 setbacks on most sides and materials like concrete, steel, etc. for visual variety. The sloping site spans 2 lots with adjacent local business zoning. The project supports strategic objectives of our planning scheme, provides local retail and residential spaces, and we note that there's a positive submission from the community about that, and having spoken to the locals, they are really craving some form of close by shops for them instead of going all the way to Sandy Bay and Kingston, I beg your pardon. Public feedback. So we had about 15 objections. They ranged over the issues of the building height, traffic, overshadowing, lack of broader precinct plan, which is an interesting point, not entirely relevant, but it's something we need to look at as a council. And also the traffic impact assessment confirmed that the traffic was manageable. So council is recommending that we approve this with some constraints around construction management, height limits, landscaping, etc. Council suggests that this development will benefit the community, which I agree with, by enhancing local amenities and providing housing diversity, which every municipality needs, aligning with future growth objectives for Taruna. So I recommend this to discussion, and I'll reserve my questions for the discussion ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Just for my own contribution, I just wanted to say that I really like the look of this development. It looks really lovely. I'm really impressed with the design. I think Taruna's really in need of a bit of a refresh, especially in that sort of local business zone. I think this development will really encourage that walkability to retail, and I think it will really improve the amenity of the area. Having said that, I do agree with some of the representations that we've received that it does seem to be really close to the footpath. I know as Chair I can't move an amendment, but I would like to foreshadow that I would likely support a reasonable amendment that was addressing that front setback, as long as it, you know, was considered reasonable. So I'm interested to kind of explore that with the councillors on the floor. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have circulated a proposed amendment which would have to be in removing item one and replacing it with an amendment. I guess by background, I feel a lot of the residents who have made representations have referred particularly to the bulk of the building and the impact it would have on the streetscape, and also that it's setting a precedent for other businesses to do the same and turn Taruna from a village into what is almost a cityscape. And I guess that I echo those concerns. I'm also concerned about the width of the footpath, which I think is fairly consistent throughout Taruna and is a suitable width for residential, but not necessarily, it's not, if it's 1.2 metres wide, which is a standard pedestrian footpath, it's not adequate for commercial or shopping environments. So I have asked the staff to tell me what the actual width of this footpath is, but I haven't yet received an answer. But I feel that has a bearing on the amendment, because if we don't reduce the width or the setback, then, or we don't increase or pull back the setback, then we won't have a future opportunity to make a pleasant streetscape where people can maybe sit and have a coffee, interact more, even have room for wheelchairs and prams going in opposite directions. And the amount of pedestrian activities in this area is going to substantially increase with this development, which I do not oppose. I would heartily support the development. And I don't know whether the timing is now to put that amendment, or should I listen to what other councillors have to say, and whether I would get support.
So that's entirely up to you, Councillor Fox.
Okay. Well, I shall read the amendment which the staff have recommended. To replace condition one on the published version with this wording: before the approved development commences, amended plans to the satisfaction and approval of the Manager Development Services must be submitted to and approved. When approved, the plans will be endorsed and will then form part of this permit. The plans must be generally in accordance with the advertised plans, but modified to show A, increased frontage setback for first and second floors to a minimum of 3 metres from that boundary. The increased setback cannot decrease the setbacks to other boundaries or increase the height of the development. Note, all affected plans must be amended and submitted. Except as otherwise required by this permit, use and development of the land must be substantially in accordance with the endorsed plans and or reports. This permit relates to the use of land or buildings irrespective of the applicant and subsequent occupants, and whoever acts on it must comply with all conditions in this permit. Any amendment, variation or extension of this permit requires further planning consent of council. Thank you.
Okay, further contributions? Are we putting it, or are we just discussing it? All right. So, Councillor Antoli and Councillor Street? Nope. So, all right. So, we're looking for a seconder. Seconded by Councillor Cordova, and we're now discussing the amendment. Councillor Cordova.
Sure, I'm happy to second the amendment. Oh, did Councillor Fox want to speak to it first? Or I'm happy to speak to it if that's your ruling, Acting Chair.
I've already spoken.
Yep, no worries. So I support the amendment. I think it's worthy of discussion. I walked up and down that area. Well, I've been there extensively, but particularly yesterday I was there. The setbacks are, for every other dwelling on the street, everything's set back a little bit. And I certainly noticed from when you're walking up and down Macquarie Street, for example, at this kind of South Hobart end of Macquarie Street, there's many buildings that open right out onto the pavement, and that kind of causes a bit of congestion, and it certainly makes for a bulkier look. So I certainly sympathise with the representatives that have made their voices known about the fact that they want this setback. Just like I would look at the example of, I think it's 180, the Hinsby, and that's an example of a big building that has that kind of bulk, but because it's set back, it reduces that bulky impact on the street. I'm interested to hear from staff about the difference between the setbacks that one should expect from the for example, a residential zoning as opposed to a local business zoning. I recognise that there's a difference there, but I hope that staff can extrapolate that for us. But I do support the amendment because I think that the community has made clear to councillors that the idea of improving Taroona is welcome. This is by no means an anti-development idea. It's just that we want it to, I guess, the message that I got from the Taroona community was that they want it to be more sensitive to its surroundings and more in line with the other buildings, with the built environment that's currently extant. So that's why I think the amendment's a good idea.
Thank you. I'm going to speak to the amendment. My feeling is that 3 metres is probably imposing a little bit too much on the developer. That would require quite a substantial redesign. My feeling is maybe half that would be more appropriate, but I'm really keen to hear what Councillor Street would like to say.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm going to try and phrase this as a question to Ms. Tyler Moore. The issue that I see with the amendment is that the setback provisions at 20.4.2 in terms of setback to street frontage appear to actually encourage setbacks closer to the street frontage rather than further away. And so it seems likely to me that such an amendment would actually be in contravention of the provisions of the planning scheme. So that's my question. I suppose the comment that goes with that is that I have a real problem with amending development applications that end up requiring redesigns. But the first question is it actually not the case that the street frontage requirements in the planning scheme are encouraging development closer to the street frontage rather than further away?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Firstly, I just wanted on record that the condition is not recommended by council staff. We did draft it in response to a request to draft one, but it's not supported by council staff, and I'm happy to answer that when the questions get asked to me. In answer to Councillor Street's questions, Clause 20.4.2, which relates to setback, which is specific to the local business area, has a requirement. Building setback from frontage must be parallel to the frontage. Tick, they've done that. And must be no more than 5 metres if fronting Channel Highway. So this is a Channel Highway one. So it needs to be less than 5 metres. If it was to go to 3 metres, it would still technically be meeting it. But through the design of it being 5, it's met the acceptable solution. So if you meet the acceptable solutions, you can't really go further to question it unless there's a particular clause that it's not complying with that would be discretionary. So as we know, the
planning scheme as acceptable solutions. If you don't meet that, it doesn't mean definitely no. It just means you roll over to the performance criteria, and the performance criteria may let you consider something that's different to the acceptable solution. So currently it does meet that acceptable solution. Was there a second part about opinion?
Look, sorry, I think I said contrary to the planning scheme. I actually meant that it already met the planning scheme, which is what you just said. Well, given that you've raised the point, could you please advise Council why the amendment's not recommended by staff?
Through you, Deputy Mayor. The Council's staff opinion about it is that the front setback is reasonable for this proposal, whilst it is different to what occurs in Taruna. That's certainly acknowledged. The planning scheme does encourage that local business areas don't waste space at the front and are brought forward as to give a more active frontage to the streetscape. This particular design has included three retails on the ground level, and they've recessed the bottom level. They could have brought that out to the right to the boundary as well, but they've recessed it so that they can have some space to probably have some food and drink tables and chairs at the front, or they might have some sort of other display. They can't display sales of goods, but it gives that opportunity for an active frontage. So when you're at person level and you're walking along there, that's the main bit that you see, and you'll see the landscaping, you'll see the recession. The upper level being the first floor, so we'll call it ground, first and second. The first floor, if we go to page 49 on the plans, oh, sorry, that might be PDF 49 as opposed to page, document page. I'll just find your document page. So, council report page 43 does show you that front setback. So if you have a look, there are elements of that front setback that have zero, where it just touches that front boundary. Then it does recess and come back for other parts, and there's also some of the areas, which is the private open space, so the balconies. So they won't have a solid wall structure. They will have various materials and give articulation to the built form. So it's not as if it's a blanket sort of tilt slab design where you've just got a sheer wall. I think certainly that would result in particular issues of building bulk. Also, when you get to the second level, it is actually recessed further, which is on council document page number 45. It shows that that second level is actually recessed further back, so it's it does step away from the site frontage to give that articulation and reduce the bulk. Other elements that they've used to reduce visual bulk includes that variation of materials and the colours that are used, different surface treatments that gives it that point of interest to look along, to look on, look as you view it from the streetscape. The overall width of the property, being a double block, is relatively wide, but in the context of all of Channel Highway and what's going on Channel Highway, it's probably not going to be that huge in proportionally to the whole streetscape. Yes, it will be different from what's there because currently we have under development of two houses on those properties that exist. Yes, they're set back and they're both single storey, so it will be a change, but in the context of what the planning scheme's encouraging, it does meet it. If the setback was increased to 3 metres or another distance, which if the councils were of a mind to accommodate, to take on board the amended plan, that could be changed. It was just a number that was picked for assistance of the councillor to prepare it for discussion. It will have impacts on that design development. So it's not very easy to just go and push walls back. It'll affect the amenity of the people that live in those. It may affect the viability of building the development as well. It's not easy to just push it back because you have to have the lift wells and the stairwells have to line up, and then it's got to line up with the car park. So it's not an easy fix, but it's not impossible. You can design anything for any site, and it is doable, but it would probably have a significant change on the design and the cost to the developer of the design. They obviously have the opportunity to appeal the condition if they didn't, and I can't predict what the tribunal would do, but noting that it does meet the acceptable solution, I think that it would be a hard task for it to go forward. Obviously, the residents have appeal rights as well, should it get approved as it is recommended by council officers, if they believe they want to appeal it and take it to the tribunal, which is an option, but and we can assist them with what the process is for that, but they may not want to do that. So there's quite a few factors that go into it. I don't see this one as really needing that to increase that front setback on this occasion. Councillor Street.
Thank you. For my own commentary around this, I actually see the setback being where it is as being a benefit to the development, the interaction with the streetscape. I actually see as something that's beneficial. Not to mention that, given the advice we've had from staff and given the fact that the development application, as it's been submitted, does actually comply with the planning scheme, I think we'd be in a fair amount of trouble if we were to try and condition the application, or sorry, condition the permit such that it would require a redesign when that aspect actually meets the acceptable solutions within the planning scheme. I think likely that condition would be found to be unreasonable. So they're the reasons that I'll be voting against the amendment.
Further contributions?
I have a question.
Councillor Cordova.
Yeah, just a question. Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, that this development has both commercial elements and residential. Of course, it sits within a zoning of the local business. I'm just hoping that, can it be explained to me, how is this still deemed fully, like, it's zoned as though it's commercial, but actually the predominant use is residential. So isn't it fair that people expect that if the predominant use of something in the built environment is residential, that therefore it should attain the same standards that one would expect from a residential building?
Ms. Tyler Moore. Through you, Mayor, the mixed-use provisions of the planning scheme don't stipulate what proportion must be residential or commercial. It does require that, well, it becomes a discretionary application by the nature of its mixed-use development and requires that the residential components be above ground level so that you're reserving the ground level for those commercial components, which is what they've done. The setback provisions are just read as the zone. It doesn't make any differentiation about whether it's residential or not residential. It simply just comes up with some numbers and overall heights and so forth that you need to comply with. The same as it doesn't actually have any assessments about the dwellings and the quality of the dwellings or the size or the open space, which is likely to change in the future. But in the current planning scheme, there's no provisions around that. So it doesn't have proportionally what it needs to be. We have had that discussion before for the Taruna Hotel, where it's all been entirely converted to residential, and we were concerned about the impacts of that on our local business owner losing the objective of that, but we were unsuccessful. There since has been a tribunal decision that turns that around and says you do need to look at the objective, but given this has the three commercial premises downstairs, I believe it still would meet the objective of the zone, which I can read out if councillors want to hear it. Further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, just another question. In relation to, obviously, part of the concern here is not just the immediate impact on the highway and Taruna around the setbacks, but part of the rest of the concern is around what potentially we might set in terms of a precedent. So if maybe staff could just speak to the likelihood or the risk that by approving or rejecting this, and approving the zero setbacks, that there could be precedent for, I suppose, for want of a better word, a bit of a concrete corridor down the Channel Highway and then units popping up left, right and centre. So maybe you could just speak to that for me, please.
Ms. Tyler Moore. Through you, Acting Mayor. The each application is assessed on its own merits, but obviously some of the clauses do refer to what is development occurs in the area already existing. It's unlikely there's going to be a precedence of built form up to the boundary because there's very few properties zoned local business. The rest of the properties in the area are zoned residential zones, whether that's low density residential or general residential, and the development on those sites needs to comply with the zone provisions. So low density residential and general residential both have setbacks from the front setback, and consider if they want to go forward what the setbacks on either side of the Mar as well. So it's unlikely to set a precedence. The Taruna Hotel's not likely to ever change because of the nature of it. They're all separate ownerships now. It'll stay like that. That leaves the Picnic Basket and the shopping centre as well. So they have the potential to do that, but it's fairly limited in the whole stretch of Taruna to be clustered together and seen as a commercial area, which may be of benefit for the area to give it identity of its commercial nature.
Councillor Dean.
So I'm hearing that along the highway there's, well, maybe you could provide a bit more of a clarity. How many of these, how many properties are zoned local business as opposed to, we've got low residential, I believe, in majority of Taruna. So are we talking a handful? Are we talking 30 or 50? Is it possible to give some indication to the public as to how many properties along the highway are zoned local business?
Ms Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor, I'm just bringing up the mapping to bring up the detail of it, but I think we need to be mindful that this is about this application and not broader planning matters. I can still answer the question, but to keep in mind, you're sitting as the planning authority for this application. Unfortunately, I don't have the capacity to share my screen, but I can tell you... So the sites that are zoned local business include these two sites, and then it has the driveway to the left, right, towards the hotel, the driveway on that. That's commercial, and then the actual shopping centre behind it that backs onto Bachelor Way, and then the parcel that is next door to 152, which is the former doctor, is zoned... Sorry, it takes a few clicks to get there. Local business. So that's it for that cluster. And then the Taruna Hotel site and the Picnic Basket sites are also local business. So I'm just scrolling over to it. So that's all that's in the vicinity.
Councillor Dean.
Look, I appreciate that this is not necessarily relevant to this exact planning decision, but it just, I think, provides some reassurance to the community members that have spoken to me, and if you read the representations of the 15, it was raised about those fears that this could have a wider impact on the amenity of Taruna. I think for me personally, in my decision-making process, Councillor Street has alluded to what the real sticking point of this amendment here is that we are at severe risk of being overturned in approval, delaying the development, but also putting costs back onto the ratepayer. It just sounds like, given this is a, this isn't performance criteria, this is an acceptable solution. So there doesn't seem to be any grey area on this one. So as much as I sympathise with the representers, members of Taruna, look, I lived pretty much across the road from this development. I know it very well. The area, and so as much as I have sympathy, I just don't think we are going to be able to, with any assurance, approve this, and so I will be voting against the amendment.
Thank you. Further contributions? Okay, we'll put just the amendment. So I'm going to put the amendment as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, so we have a division. So all those in favour, please raise your hand. We have Councillor Fox and Councillor Cordova. And against, we have Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street and Gladewright. So the amendment is lost. We are back on the substantive. I've only had myself and Councillor Fox. So further contributions on the and Antoli. And you're right, Anatoly. Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'll speak briefly to this. And thank you to all the councillors for their engagement with that proposed amendment. I have a quick question about the footpath and the issue around what takes place with the bins. One of the issues that's been raised by a representative is around the narrow nature of the footpath, where the bins will be stored, and whether that will be a risk to people in bike lanes and that kind of thing. So can we have some explanation as to what's going on there? Thanks.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the proposal is required to have private waste collection, so the bins won't be at the front. The bins are located in the semi-basement. It can be seen on the plans. They'll need to collect from there, so there won't be an issue about filling up the pavement with those rubbish bins. And the question about the footpath width is 1.4 metres.
Which is quite narrow, right?
It's a standard foot... Sorry, through you, Deputy Mayor.
Through you, Acting.
It's a standard width through there. The question was asked, it was mentioned earlier by Councillor Fox, about widening the footpath. The widening of the footpath is probably a greater project that Council needs to look at, because I think that the reference that people, a lot of the residents make, are about existing issues. Mm. So we need to be mindful of that, whether that's Council project and whether that then involves acquisition of land to widen the footpaths. This particular site has a small width of grass between, so it is a tiny nature strip now that I've looked at the plans. It's 1.4, and then there's a small strip, and then at the property boundary goes there. So they could certainly fill in, and quite potentially they would want to fill that section in anyway, because it'll just grow weeds. So they could do that. But I guess you need to be mindful, if you're going to widen the footpath, that you're going to go along normal width, tiny little bit of wide width, and then back to normal width. So is it really serving the purpose? Is it achieving what it's desired? So I think that that needs to be consideration outside the planning authority about council projects that could be considered, and possibly it has in the past, I'm not sure. But I don't see that there would be justification to require the subject site using some of their property to widen the footpath without any proper council plan in place for that.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Yes, I will just finish my contribution. Actually, one more question. What weight is expected to be given to the future character statements? And the thrust of my question, I'm not seeking an opinion, so I'll try and word it carefully to not seek an opinion, but in my experience, I've noticed that future character statements, even where a development application doesn't necessarily align with future character statements, it seems that they seem to have somehow less authority than obviously the acceptable solutions and performance criteria. So I guess it's a two-pronged question. The first is, how do we think this proposal aligns with the future character statements? And secondly, should that be given a lot of weight if it doesn't align with the future character statements?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there is a response by the Council officer about the future character statements in the report, in the earlier part of the report. It would just take me a bit to find the page number, but there is some compliance with that. In terms of weighting, there isn't actually a lot of weighting in future character statements, unfortunately, and much of the frustration of residents from time to time, because they say nice things that are good, that make sense, but unless the planning scheme, the acceptable solutions or the performance criteria call them up, then there's not actually a place really to have regard to them, unfortunately.
Thank you. So through you, Acting Mayor, to conclude my remarks, I think that this proposal has the weight of the planning scheme on its side, and therefore it's critically important that councillors, whether they're acting as a planning authority or not, that they take heed and act in the best interest of their community. And I recognise and sympathise with the many representations that have been made on this one. I think it would equally be irresponsible to try and put a stop to this, knowing what we've heard from the planning experts about the risk of appeal and overturning a council decision and the concomitant costs that would be placed on ratepayers. I think to take a glass half full approach on this one. This area of our municipality can do with a facelift, and can do with, obviously, in the midst of a housing crisis, I think having a mixed use building with more places for more families to stay can only be a good thing. We'll all have different opinions about design elements and things like that, and I respect those viewpoints, but I think on balance this is a development application that should go ahead.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions? If not, I'll put the motion.
Sorry, Claire.
Councillor Dean, sorry, you're a bit slow off the mark there. Councillor Dean.
A couple of questions. really relating to the sight lines and that, the safety, I suppose, of it sits on kind of the apex of the curve. So my first question is that I think it was earlier this year or late last year, there was work done to make access to the bus stop, which sits directly across the road. So they've put in a drop down so it's accessible on the curbing. This sits exactly where the access point is for cars. So I'm just wondering if we can be reassured that that will be moved further down or work will be done so that it will remain accessible on the other side of the road.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Sorry, through you, Deputy Mayor, I had a message passed to me, so I actually missed what the reference was to move down. Was it the access?
So across directly where you're going to be coming out of this development with your car, there was work at that exact point to put a drop-down curb so it was all accessible, so you could cross the road with a wheelchair or a pram. But now that work is obviously going to be taken away and it will be a driveway. There's not going to be accessibility on the other side to get across the bus road, so to the bus stop. So I'm just wondering, has any thought been considered to making sure that whoever did that, whether it was State Growth or us, contracted that work out, whether it will be moved further along so people with prams and wheelchairs will still be able to get to the bus stop across the road?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, thanks for the clarification. I'm not aware of the works that occurred or who undertook those works or for what purpose. So, no, there's no proposal in this application for the developer to be required to do that. Whether Council or DSG, knowing that it's a DSG road, choose to do that, that's for Council or DSG to consider and could be advocated for outside the Planning Authority. The driveway itself potentially could be used as to get off the footpath and down there, but not ideal if cars are coming out of there. It would be a consideration outside this planning application.
Councillor Dean.
So just to follow up on that, has State Growth considered whether a pedestrian island or some kind of improvements to, as you've just pointed out, that the curbing will now be a driveway which cars were coming in and out of, has any consideration from State Growth been given to this application as to whether improvements either A, need to be made to the pedestrian access or the servicing of the bus stop across the road?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the application was referred to State Growth and that's included in the officer's report, including the comments they made. No, they made no comments about road upgrades, refuge islands, changes to the curbs. They only made some comments about the shrubs and they didn't ask for any further assessments and they were happy with the traffic impact assessment that was provided by the applicant.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, I note that the report DSG highlighted that there were some shrubs to the left that's owned by the doctor's surgery that need actually removal. If you have a look, it is quite, as it's grown up, I imagine that's going to be quite an issue and that does need to move. I'm sure the doctors will be amenable to that, I hope. Look, just a general comment. I think Councillor Cutover hit the nail on the head in the last few comments that he made, that this is a positive contribution to Taroona. It will provide 18 units. We're not talking four, three, four bedroom on 800 square metre blocks that potentially people might actually be able to afford to move to the area, and there is a huge demand in Taroona for people to downsize. There are many elderly people living in Taroona that want to stay in Taroona and simply cannot afford to stay where they are or cannot find downsizing accommodation. So whoever moves into the 18 units, I think it will be a great benefit. Whatever ends up, it's indicated in the report that it's likely to be a cafe and then two retail. So whatever ends up being there, I think, is going to be a net gain for the community. But clearly, 18 units coming into Taroona is really, really positive. And whilst I sympathise with the discussion we've had earlier about the setbacks, I think we've been reassured that this isn't going to be happening up and down the highway. And this is a bit of an anomaly in terms of the zoning. So I'm very happy to support this and hope that it gets underway soon.
Thank you. Further contributions? Okay. Yes. Thank you. Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up?
I'll just briefly say that it's good to see we had a robust discussion and we have absorbed some concerns from the community, and I want to thank Council Officer for her input, which was excellent and very helpful. And I'm glad we hopefully will vote in favour of this to get it going for the whole community.
Great, thank you. So I will put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Street. There is a recommendation on page 27. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session recommences at, 6:25 p.m. We're on page 74 now, petition still being actioned. A report on the petition headed pedestrian and access crossing to Meredith's Orchard will be provided to a future council meeting. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Officers reports to council. We're considering proposed new road names. There is a recommendation on page 76 and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is to seek approval from Council for two proposed road names, that is Streamside Way and Clematis Place, for recently developed roads in the Spring Farm Estate in Kingston. The report tells us that the proposed name Streamside, suggested by the developer, holds significance for the land as it refers to the proximity to the waterway Whitewater Creek. And the proposed name, Clematis, has been selected from Council's list of pre-approved road names by the developer. The report and the recommendation says that it's considered the proposed new road names are appropriate for the subdivision, so I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Any other further contributions? No? Would you like to sum up, Councillor Bain? All right, I'll put the motion. It was moved by Councillor Bain, seconded Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried. We're now on page 80, submission on draft development assessment panels bill 2024. There is a recommendation on page 83 and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved. Looking for a mover, please. Move Councillor Antoli. Seconded Councillor Fox. Mm-hmm. Councillor Antoli.
Okay. So this is a bit of a controversial one that's entered into the community via the state government. The first development assessment plan was trialled in Western Australia in 2011. No other state has actually adopted it. It's still in operation in WA, and the original intention is to basically decrease politicisation, gosh, that's difficult to get out, of the planning process and speed up approval times. There has not been widespread community consultation on this. It's basically been through the local government association and the councils, and I understand that the prevailing view is negative from the councils. I won't want to sway basically the direction of our discussions, but basically for social housing, the government wants to bring down an average approval time to around 91 days, and I believe for social housing and for other approvals, other applications, about 110 from memory. Is that correct? 91 to 110? I believe so. Happy to be corrected. The problem is in WA, though, it's already doubled that, but I'll add that to my contribution later. And we're now asked to put to the government our sort of position paper on the subject, our final position after we've sort of discussed this internally. We've actually also, I believe, also written already on one occasion previous to the government. It's now been pushed back again to councils to reconsider. In the hope, I'm assuming, that the government, local government authorities will change their mind. So open it up for discussion, and I'll leave my contribution, as if I may, to later on in the discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further contributions?
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks. I would like to move an amendment, and the amendment reads to add a clause C to the end of the recommendation so that the full recommendation, well, the full recommendation would, A, note the proposed framework for the establishment of the development assessment panels contained within the draft bill, B, provide the CEO with the delegation to provide a submission on the draft bill as outlined in the report, and C, this is the added bit, strongly opposes the draft bill for the reasons outlined in the report.
Councillor Antoli and Councillor Fox, how do you feel about the amendment?
I don't support the amendment. I'm quite comfortable with it as written. Plus, it also presupposes the direction of our discussion to make an amendment right now.
Okay, so in that case, we will need a seconder to the amendment.
I would have seconded, but I can't, but I do support the amendment as a seconder of the motion.
I'll second it so we can have the discussion.
Okay, Councillor Dean has seconded. Councillor Cordova, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This is a real stinker. The DAPs are no good, and I'll try and elucidate why they're no good and why we need to be really strong in our opposition of them. The first and most important reason, to my mind, is that this is taking planning decisions away from elected members, undermines local democracy, and reduces community participation in planning processes. That's a quote that I'm reading from the report. Not only that, there's no demonstrated need to introduce a new development assessment pathway. That's another quote. The DAP framework does not achieve its stated intent of deconflicting councils' roles. So here's an example of that. It's supposed to be, the whole idea is that it's going to save time. And apparently the way it's going to save time is by introducing a whole brand new set of criteria, a whole brand new set of timeframes, a whole brand new pathway. Apparently that's going to save time. And also it's supposed to be apolitical. The whole idea is to reduce the political bias that's perceived within the planning process. And the final arbiter of this is the minister, according to this draft proposal. So here's a newsflash. The minister is a political position, and the minister of the day, depending on what political persuasion they're of, will make political decisions. So even if in its own intent this bill, this proposed development assessment panel bill is no good, it's getting off to the... it's totally irredeemable, and it's sending us down the wrong path. As it says in the report, this further complicates an already complicated system. So if you're sitting at home and you're concerned about how many different reports and licences and permits and the time that it takes to do things and how they can stop the clock and start the clock, imagine what's going to happen when they create a whole brand new process that's convoluted, that's complex, and that is totally political because the minister is the final arbiter. So how are you going to find the minister? At this stage, I can't even name the minister because the minister changes every couple of minutes, it seems, at the moment. And I'm not just having a go at the current government, I have full confidence that the opposition would stuff it up too. This is an irredeemable proposal. I don't support it at all, and I think we need to send a very strong message to the people in that state parliament that they are heading down entirely the wrong path by trying to take local decisions away from local people. And I have a question about specifically the ability under this proposal to direct a council to draft amendments to the LPS. And the thrust of my question... is it true, because this is my reading, the LPS, the Local Provision Schedule, is where local people get to decide through a process what zones should affect their local areas. So take Snug as an example. We've determined that Snug should be a village, and therefore Snug is zoned a village. Isn't it true that if this draft LPS bill comes to fruition, and the minister is then allowed to direct councils to draft amendments to their LPS, if they say, well, Snug's got a great beach, it deserves to have a 15-storey apartment building on the beach, couldn't they just direct council to draft an amendment to our LPS to change the zoning of Snug away from what it currently is towards inner residential or something else? Have I totally misinterpreted the risk here?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I believe that is the case. The process under Section 40B has to be exhausted first, though, for that to occur. But yes, it appears that the Minister would have the ultimate direction for that to happen.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that is an entirely... I'm so glad that that's been raised because that answer has come forth, because that really shines a spotlight to me on how abjectly irresponsible this suggestion is from the state government to have this development assessment panel. It totally strips the democracy of local decision making for local planning away from who it should be with. And I just don't trust whoever the minister is of the day to make a decision about Snug or Woodbridge or Gordon or Kingston or Blackmans Bay. I'm sure they're all good faith people trying to do the best that they can, but they just have no idea about our local community. And when they're on a carousel the way that they are, as though this was supposed to save time, imagine if you start the process under one minister and then the minister changes and the minister changes and it changes again and then it goes to the Premier. Try picking up the phone to the Premier. I mean, I think this will add so many layers of red tape. And it will slow down process, as it says in the report. It will complicate matters further. It doesn't achieve its stated aim. I think it's a power grab, to be honest, by the state government. I think it's a power grab, and I don't like it, and I want us to send a really strong message to the state government that this isn't for us. And send that message to Mr. Winter as well. It's not just Mr. Rockcliffe, it's Mr. Winter as well. We don't want any part of this. That's what I want to say.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next, I had Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Well, despite Councillor Cordova's passion, I still don't support this amendment. I don't like amendments that basically like to double underline a report and say, and furthermore, we want you to know that we don't support you because of every reason that's in the report. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's just a waste of time. I think we can tell the CEO through our discussion our feelings, and we have provided him the delegation to go back to the Planning Minister, who is Felix Ashton Ellis and has been since the government was formed, supported by Simon Baracus as his departmental secretary, and it's actually in the documentation who the minister is that we've had to read. So I think we can just discuss it. I'd rather just move on, vote on this amendment. I don't support it for the reasons I've already shared.
Councillor Dean.
Look, I regretted deeply seconding this. I realised straight away we're going to hear that anyway. So whether we heard it at this discussion or the next one, it didn't matter. We were going to get that spiel regardless. But I will not be supporting this. I think the original submission that we put was a sensible one. It gave sensible feedback on the practicality of implementing this and highlighted some issues. In essence, there is nothing actually wrong with the idea of progressing social housing applications that we know get stuck in the queue and end up at the tribunal. So why don't we think of ways to speed up the process and forego that entire length, and as Councillor Antoli pointed out, the extended timeframes, the cost to the developer. In this case, we're talking about centre care and not-for-profits. So, of course, it's a good idea and notion, but I appreciate that staff have highlighted some of the issues with the bill itself, and so I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I want to highlight that there are some benefits, and what we are discussing today is to give the CEO delegation the authority to provide a submission. So I don't want that submission to strongly oppose the draft bill, because that is just an outright, you know, blockbuster of a message. We want to highlight that there are some implementation issues, but that although it is in line with our original submission, that there are some benefits that could be deemed from this if done properly. So I'm going to reject this, and I sincerely hope we don't have to hear that twice.
Further contributions on the amendment? Okay, I will put the amendment. It was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Dean. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Yes. We have a division, so those in favour, please raise your hand, is Fox and Cordova. And against, raise your hand, is Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street and Gladewright. So the amendment is lost. We are back on the substantive. So far, Antoli and Fox, correct?
I didn't give a contribution, though.
Oh, that's right.
But I'm still entitled to contribute. I didn't contribute.
All right, so calling for further contributions, Councillor Cordova.
Point of order. Can I just have a secret clarification? What is deemed, so that we're just moving forward for the rest of the meeting, what is deemed a contribution? If you move a motion, is that deemed then your contribution, just so that Councillor Antoli doesn't miss out on opportunities foregoing.
to participate.
Yes, I understand that when he moved the motion, that was his contribution, but because he was the mover, he also gets the right to sum up, which gives him a second contribution at the end. And I think that's what he indicated to me that he would like to do. So, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. In addition to the four terrible things that are outlined in the report, which is that there's no demonstrated need, the government, there's fears that the government will select the panel members, so that'll be potentially political appointments, that it's taking planning decisions away from elected members, it further complicates an already complicated system, and it removes merit appeal rights, and that's unjust. That's the bit that I now, in this bit, want to focus on, is that it's unfair to not have an appeal system. So this particular proposal says that in order to expedite decisions, there'll be no appeal. And I just want to know, here's a question, is there any precedent for, like, what other planning pathway approvals processes have no option for appeal in Tasmania? Would this be breaking new ground in terms of not letting people appeal decisions?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, most parts have an appeal right, and certainly when there's a planning scheme amendment, there are hearings by an independent body, the Planning Commission. I believe in this framework that they will have hearings, but it's by the people that are making the decision, so it's not independent.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Well, through you, Acting Mayor, in 2009 there was a review of the Tasmanian Planning Commission that found that the TPC could not be considered independent. The purpose of that review was conducted by independent consultants to ensure that the TPC's structure and functions were appropriate for it to continue to function as an independent decision maker and advisory body. And my understanding is that the findings were that the TPC could not be considered independent. So I think there's, right from the get-go, I think the main thing that I'd like us to really take heed with is that this idea is to usurp power away from local government and to give it to whoever the minister of the day is. I think by constructing a brand new process, like, for example, with a brand new set of criteria, sure, but will there be new statutory timeframes involved in this? There's constantly issues about people worrying that they're stopping the clock and starting the clock. Will this, if you're going down this pathway, what are the statutory timeframes like compared to the other processes?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, there are statutory timeframes included, and they're longer than what council officers get. They must need more time than we're afforded. But you may have already started the process through council, because the bill allows you to sort of start through council and then decide that you not very happy about it and then ask for it to go to the development assessment panel. So you may have already chewed through a lot of time and then you go to the development assessment panel. I'm not clear without looking at the bill again about whether their time frame starts at that point or whether they say, oh, well, council's used up these points of hold, request for further information. Do they start from there or not? I'd have to look at the bill in detail to see whether it is, but it is a longer time frame.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. So what we've just heard is that it is a longer time frame, meaning it will take more time. So the things that we've heard now about DAPs are, one, the state government could direct us to change the zoning of certain areas. Therefore, what you think of as currently agricultural, if the minister so chooses, could turn into inner residential. I mean, that's hyperbole, but is it? I mean, we just don't know. Let me read out Section 8, Clause 5, quote, "The minister may refuse to refer an application for a discretionary permit to the commission under this section for any reason." Now, when I read draft legislation, I really don't like reading clauses that say the minister may choose to do whatever they want for any reason. That's very broad brush legislation, and it certainly doesn't reduce red tape. It increases it. I think that this is ultimately a political gesture. I think the idea that it removes appeal rights is abhorrent. I don't think that it's going to reduce any kind of bias. But I also just, in general, don't like the fact that, you know, people in Tasmania, in Kingborough, you know, you can't afford a house, you'll be waiting hours to use the healthcare system, our education is some of the worst outcomes in the nation, and what's the best idea from the people in the state parliament is to put another level of red tape, biased, political, unappealable bureaucracy in between you and your project. It's just so misguided in its step, and it's just indicative of people who are out of touch. So I really think that I would like us to be very clear
in that submission, and I trust the delegated authority to the CEO to make clear that this particular bill is totally misguided, it's ill-conceived and it's pointless. It will add to red tape, and it's coming from a group of people in the State Parliament who seem to be wanting to add as much red tape and complication to people's lives as utterly possible, and that's why I strongly disagree with the DAPs.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I've got Councillor Antoli with a question and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you. I've got a couple of questions on the process on how this might work through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor, to the Council officers. So currently, it was mentioned that their process will be longer. I believe it's 91 days for social and affordable housing determinations and something like 112 days for everything else. And as I understand it, if I want to go through the council DA process, I can then opt out and then go into the DAP process. Can you explain how that works? And then B, does that mean I have to pay as a applicant a second set of fees, or the delta between what I paid council and what I need to pay the DAP? Can you explain that for the user, please?
Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So, to be clear, the planning authority or the applicant can refer the application to the minister for a decision on whether it meets the criteria to then be referred to a DAP, or the DAP, which would be established by the TPC. So the criteria are set out in the draft bill. They are quite broad, and there's not, I was unable to find guidance on potentially how they might be applied. So, for example, the application is considered to be of significance, the application is overly complex, its application is controversial or likely to be controversial, and the planning authority has or is likely to have a conflict of interest, or there is a perceived bias. So the minister will then make the decision as to whether it would then is eligible to go to a DAP. It didn't provide the detail that I could see in the supporting documentation around how that process would then work in terms of fees, timing, etc. It could very well be in the detail, and I didn't quite interpret it correctly, but I would have to take that on notice.
Further question?
Yes, please. Are council officers aware of any other jurisdiction that has discussed this DAP model? Because only WA, correct me if I'm wrong, has adopted it. Has any other jurisdiction discussed it? And if so, why hasn't it been implemented, or why has it been dropped as an option? Because no one seems to be doing it apart from WA.
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor. In the document that's provided in response to the submissions by all the councils, which summarises the main topics, they have listed the different states. So there's reference to Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia and Western Australia. We have council staff that have worked in both Victoria and New South Wales and dealt with the DAPs, but they were structured differently, operated differently, so they're not like for like for what's proposed in Tasmania.
Okay, so there are other DAPs apart from WA,
correct.
Is that right? Okay,
correct.
So it was, did you say South Australia, Queensland, what were the others?
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, Western Australia.
So it's much more
almost
widely.
Everyone.
Oh, right, I see.
Further question?
Yep, and can you give us any feedback on whether or not in those other states, because I understand WA, the actual average has actually more than doubled what the original intention was for approvals. Do you know if the other states have had blowouts as well in approval time frames?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, no, I don't have that data. The statutory decision-making for a council is Tasmania is the shortest in the whole country at 42 days.
Mm.
I'm not sure about the DAP decision-making timeframes. I haven't looked into it.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
I just had a question on page 82. There's a statement here that ultimately, I shouldn't paraphrase, the model raises concerns in relation to a DAP's ability to consider and account for the practical implications of ongoing permit enforcement in the assessment process, which post approval is council's responsibility to manage and enforce. Just like more elaboration on those comments, because that is very concerning to me.
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's my understanding that once a permit is assessed and approved by a DAP, it would then be handed back to the relevant council in which it is located. So I suppose concerns staff have regarding that is that our council staff are obviously very well aware and well versed in, I suppose, our local planning matters and setting. We also, understand the implications of what is approved in then having to A, enforce a permit if that's what transpires, or often some of the assets associated with a development will then become council's to manage. So the concern is around a DAP having less of an ability or a limited ability to understand the intricacies of that and the ongoing practical implications, financial as well, for councils in managing, I suppose, post-development and permit approval.
Further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Yeah, just try and be really brief. Look, the government clearly isn't all that worried about what our submission is going to be. They've disregarded the vast majority of submissions because those against it have mobilised and written in and had their say, and they've pretty much ignored it. But just in the terms of providing some balance from what we've heard from Councillor Cotto, because no one else is really making a contribution, because the CEO will be providing a submission, again, I think we need to highlight there are some benefits, and we've done well. I think the staff have done an excellent job of highlighting some implementation issues. But I think no one could disagree with the fact when you get an example, you know a social housing development is going to end up being complained against by its neighbours, and it will end up in the tribunal, and it will delay it and potentially stop that from even happening. There is absolute benefit. It's the way that they've gone about it potentially, which obviously we've raised issues with, and so I think there's a good opportunity for us to provide that feedback, but like I said, it's probably going to fall on deaf ears anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions? Just for my own contribution, I know in the past I've spoken favourably of DAPs. The bit that I like about DAPs is the fact that the delegated authority at council when it comes to us councillors I see as a bit of a pointless process. We've just seen that in the item that was earlier on the agenda tonight, whereby we couldn't really represent our local community because all we were considering is whether or not a proposal met the criteria in the scheme or not. So I feel completely pointless in that process. So that is one element that I feel is kind of positive about a DAP, is that it's with experts. However, the elected member part of the delegated authority is only half, and what is really, really valuable is our own planning department, and as Ms. Shikuti has really clearly pointed out, that's where our local knowledge is, and that is very, very valuable, and that's what we lose with the DAPs. So I largely agree with everything in the report, and I'm happy to support it. Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. In summary, I acknowledge that this was well-intentioned by the Minister. I appreciate the clarification that it's a lot more widely used than I first realised, so thank you for that bit of information. I've spoken to a lot of people in the community and I have not heard one negative thing about it. I think the problem with that is that they don't understand how it works. And when I explain to them how their approval timelines will blow out and DAPs are more expensive to apply for, they're in WA, for example, they're $4,000 to $8,000 per application more expensive to apply for, which if you're a developer and you think it's going to be done quickly, you're looking forward to that. When DAPS came out in WA, it was meant to be a 70-day approval process. It's now blown out to an average of 145 days per application. It's more than doubled. And apparently over there, the local government authority has done a report that they published in 2020, and the reason for the blowout is it's become a bureaucracy, another level of red tape which has been discussed. So it's a little bit like certain ideas in life. They sound good until you have to implement them. Like getting your child their first iPad sounds good until you finally actually have to suffer under the weight of that. I personally will be voting against this because I think it robs the applicant of natural justice, and I think it creates the false expectation that they will actually get a better and faster result than council, which from my research is just the opposite. And in WA, there's seven councils that want to opt out of this process, and I don't even know if that's possible over there, and I don't know if under this legislation it's possible to do that or not. So I will be voting against it for a lot of those reasons, and in support of the report, I should be saying. I'll be voting against the concept. Thank you. I'll be voting against the concept of a DAP, and I'll be voting in support of the report. Thank you.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yes, thank you for that little nod that said, what are you talking about?
So it was moved by Councillor Antoli. I'm putting the motion, by the way. It was moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Fox. There is a recommendation on page 83. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. So we're skipping forward to page 143 now. Policy 1.11, Fraud Control and Corruption Prevention. There's a recommendation on page 144, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Move Councillor Street, seconded Councillor Cordover. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This is a really sensible update to our current Fraud Control and Corruption Prevention policy. Apart from a couple of administrative changes, the major changes are the changes of the definitions to align with the Australian Standard for Fraud and Corruption Control. That's really sensible. We shouldn't have our own definition. We should be referring back to the Australian Standard. The policy otherwise remains current and up to date, and I support the recommendation as printed.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Briefly, this policy is aimed at reducing council's risk. So the changes, albeit minor, it's really good that we are regularly reviewing and reflecting on this policy because it's very important. It details a clear policy on fraud control and corruption prevention. And it also notes in the report that this is identified as a risk on our risk register. And the renewal of this policy will continue to aid council in reducing the financial and reputational risk associated with fraud and corruption. So I think it's important that these things come to us for review. We take a look at them, improve them where necessary, but also it helps all of us keep it front of mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Street, would you like to sum up? I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Cordover. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried. Page 158, resolutions from the Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee. Recommendation on page 159. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Cordover, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Briefly, I think this is a really good thing. The recommendation here, in addition to noting the minutes from the committee, it also approves the committee to explore the possibility of holding a disability expo in 2025 at the Kingborough Community Hub with potential funding through a community grant. While Baptacare would take the lead in organising the event, our Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee members would form a subcommittee to assist with detailed planning. So there's, I think, a really good opportunity there. It will help boost the reputation of our council and show that we're moving in the right direction, and it will also help upskill and engage what is a really amazing committee that's doing great work. So more power to them, and I endorse the motion.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli.
As having chaired this meeting when the matter was discussed, I would like to reflect the fact that all the members of the Access Committee were very keen for this to happen, and there was a lot of enthusiasm from them. And I really appreciate the fact that BatCare has raised this as an issue and offered to do it for us. So that's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So can someone explain what the form of the expo would take? So some expos are focused on providing providers to the community to consider. Others are looking for recruits. And also to note that BatCare, as I understand it, is only one of two major contracted providers to the NDIS. There's another one. So would they only be hosting the organisations they support? How inclusive, for want of a better word, is this expo going to be? Does anyone know?
Ms Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I believe because the motion is to investigate the possibility, that detail will have to be worked through in holding in that sort of process before determining what will be in or not in the exhibition or how it will work. Yeah.
Yeah. If I can make a suggestion that if we go ahead with it, and I heartily support it, that there would be some individuals there that have expertise to guide the community on how to access the actual NDIS, because that seems to be a real issue as opposed to knowing which provider you want when you have it. The real barrier to entry is how to get in for those that qualify, and that would be a very helpful exhibitor, I think is the word I'm looking for, at the expo.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further contributions? Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up? So I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. Recommendation on page 159. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried unanimously. Page 164, Annual Report 2023-24. Recommendation on page 164. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Dean, seconded, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. A fairly straightforward one, but I'm sure a fantastic one for members of the community to, if they have the opportunity, to peruse our annual report. It is what's before us now. It's something that we have to do. Each council has to actually produce an annual report. It includes a summary, I suppose, of everything that we do throughout the year, as well as the financial statements. So I think it's kind of one that speaks for itself. We probably could spend a long time, and I'm sure a few councils will put out a few highlights of what we've done in the year, and rightly so, but it does a very good job. It's very easy to read, acknowledging that we have a new CEO. Unfortunately, he's not present tonight to be part of us moving this, as well as the Mayor. But overall, I think it's a very good report, easy to read, and as Councillor Antoli pointed out, it even chops off my head. So thank you very much. I'll move it.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Further contributions, Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Agree with Councillor Dean. It's an excellent report. And on page 200, where it's got the year in review, if you read through there, there's some excellent highlights. So a big thank you to all the council staff and contractors who've been involved in contributing to those great achievements. I just wanted to point out one small amendment, which I've raised with Ms Morton, on page 178 under the committee representations. I just need my name taken off the Sport and Rec Strategy Steering Committee. And I think we need to add Councillor Midgley and Councillor Antoli to that one. So just a small amendment. But fantastic report.
Thank you. That's been noted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Bain. Yes, I just wanted to reiterate that it's a great read. It actually gives you a snapshot of what we're up to, what we're like. This is the sort of a document you'd want to read if you move to the community. I don't know how we can actually alert people that move to the community that start paying rates here that they should actually go to a document like this, because I really think it's a really interesting and topical read. It's sort of more helpful than a 10-year plan. It's very much a now snapshot. I'd like to also thank council officers for fixing that error where I was actually on the Sports and Rec Steering Group, so thank you for that. I note that on page 179, the leave of absence table seems to spill over awkwardly into the very next page in an odd manner that You might want to look at the formatting of that. If you just have a look at 179, it sort of cuts off a table, an Excel table, and part of it then spills over to the next page, and you then don't have the left-hand columns telling you what the rest of the lines mean. And a similar thing with 181, which is the remuneration table. It spills over two pages and probably should be formatted in a manner that sits neatly on one. But I'll leave that with council staff to add, and thank the team for their effort putting it together. I don't know if that falls on Ms. Morton's or Ms. Adams' shoulders, but thanks to either who... Ms. Morton, OK, well done.
OK.
That means you have control to fix any errors. Good on you.
OK, I think we've made a note of that. Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just want to share in the expressing an enormous debt of gratitude and thanks to the council staff for the incredible amount of work that's been put into this document, and also all the programs that underlie it and fill out the content of this great report. It's really wonderful to see, and it also helps... it helps illustrate just the breadth of council's operations and services, the amount of work that goes in from so many different people, passionate people, people who care deeply about their community and the amazing things that they do, from the launching of the new accessible beach matting, the end-of-life expo that we've held, the award ceremonies that we hold, all the amazing environmental programs, the fact that we're going to have a Jack Jumpers High Performance Centre and all of the work that's going in around those things. There are so many programs, and I'm sure that many community members will avail themselves of the opportunity to read the report, but I really just wanted to take a moment to say thank you to our staff. Council is so much more than roads, rates and rubbish. There are incredible programs and services that Council offers, and those are enumerated in this report, but also it's a great invitation to community members, I think, as well, to look at some of the services and programs on offer and get more involved, you know, get involved with your local council and all the activities that are going on, because there really is some good work happening in Kingborough.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. I echo everything you've just said. You've put it so well. Thank you. Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'd echo the same sentiment. And I think it's wonderful to see all the photographs. A picture says 1,000 words, and this is full of pictures. It's not just a boring report, but at the same time, it also has very important facts and figures. So I recommend it as a very... attractive and well-prepared document. Well done, staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions? Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up? No, I put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Recommendation on page 164. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Page 321, sorry, appendices. There is a recommendation on page 321. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Cordova.
I have no questions, so I'll take the appendices as read, but I look forward to other councillors' contributions.
Thank you. Any questions or contributions?
Just
Councillor Dean.
Just the one question. The smoke-free areas one does seem to keep popping up and then kind of being pushed back a little bit. I just want to... Is that correct? It'll come to the next council meeting then in November? Don't worry. Yeah. I'll take it that it's unknown and we'll just see.
Ms. Shikiti.
I believe that's the plan. We have had some resourcing constraints, but at this stage that will be the plan.
Further questions or comments? I will put the motion as printed on the screen. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Bain. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Notices of motion. There are no notices of motion, so we move to the confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council, by absolute majority, move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, application for leave of absence, Taruna Bowls and Community Club loan. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye. And against? Motion is carried. Thank you. So in accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the